The market doesn't joke around, so why would you? Get serious. Choose Tastytrade. Tastytrade gives you the tools you need to make smarter moves. Dig into data with advanced charting, track profit accurately with order chain trackers, see risk clearly with curve analysis, and trade with low-capped commissions, stocks, options, futures, and more. All on one platform. No wonder serious traders choose Tastytrade. Join the club, genius. Tasty Trading is a registered broker-dealer and member of FINRA and SIPC.
I'm Frank Holland, and you're listening to CNBC's Worldwide Exchange. Our show is live weekdays at 5 a.m. Eastern. Listen in. It is 5 a.m. here at CNBC Global Headquarters. I'm Frank Holland. Here is your 5 at 5. We start with stocks looking to bounce back after the Dow and the S&P 500. They both notched their third straight day of losses, but that stumble not keeping several companies from hitting fresh 52-week highs. Futures are higher this morning. Nelson Peltz getting some fresh support for his bid for seats on Disney's board. We have some details on who's backing the activist investor. Shares of former President Trump's social media company. They are surging in their debut as the intersection of politics and markets. It only gets bigger. Plus, rescue operations and that bridge collapse in Baltimore, they're now turning to a recovery effort. This is companies' work to try to reroute cargo at one of the nation's busiest ports. And China's Xi Jinping sitting down with American CEOs as Beijing looks to bolster fading investments by foreign companies. It's Wednesday, March the 27th, 2024, and you are watching Worldwide Exchange right here on CNBC. Good morning and welcome to Worldwide Exchange. Thank you so much for being here with us. Let's get you ready for the trading day ahead. We kick off the hour with a check of U.S. stock futures after the Dow and the S&P, they notched their third straight day of losses yesterday. Taking a look, we're seeing the markets in the pre-market in the green across the board. Looks like the Dow would open up just about 140 points higher. The S&P and the Nasdaq both about a third of a percent higher in the futures market as well. So the Nasdaq also making it 2 days a row in the red. You see right here, markets for the week to date in the red across the board. It looks like the Dow's down about a half a percent for the week. The S&P just over that. The Nasdaq, again, the hardest hit. You're seeing the downturn here. As we talk about this, these losses, there's also a number of S&P 500 companies that are hitting new 52-week highs. That includes some really well-known names with a lot of consumer exposure. We're talking Netflix, Disney, Domino's Pizza, General Motors, and Hilton. You can see right now many of them, or three of them, I should say, are higher in the pre-market as well. We're also checking the bond market as we march towards that PCE report on Friday. Taking a look at yields right now, we're seeing the benchmark at 4.24, pretty much the same level it's been at over the last couple of days. We also want to get a check on oil this morning. WTI and Brent both coming off their fourth negative session in the last five. Taking a look at the oil market this morning, WTI falling back below 81 bucks a barrel. We noted that just a few days ago, down 1.25%. Brent crude basically at 85.25, down 1.25% as well. Okay, we also have to take a look at what a lot of people call digital gold. That's Bitcoin, as it works to stay above that 70,000 level, actually falling just below it. Remember, Bitcoin trades around the clock, down about a third of a percent right now, basically trading at 69,525. We'll continue to watch it, still for the month up almost 12%. Okay, that's your setup. We now want to turn our attention over to Europe and see how it's shaping up as its trading day gets underway. Our Erbile Gumedes in our London newsroom with much more in the early action. Erbile, good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Frank. Look, it's a bit of a mixed picture out of Europe then. We're anticipating European inflation data, and that's what the market will look towards then as we head towards the end of this shortened week then. Today's pretty much the Thursday of this trading week, isn't it? Look, you're seeing some negativity then out of the UK as well as out of France right now, but it really is all marginal. When one takes a look at that, of course, we are looking at the likes of H&M, which put out its numbers today. The big gain across the stock 600 across today's picture, then double-digit gains, in fact, for H&M. On the back of what looks like they're aiming for a revival then in its counter. Of course, the question mark is around that retail space, whether more growth is possible then when you have the likes of Shein and Temu also still at play over there. That and that PCE data out on Friday, the market will certainly be looking towards all of that.
All right, Erbile, thank you very much. Erbile Gumedes, live in our London newsroom. All right, we're going to turn our attention back to Wall Street and the latest Delivering Alpha Investor Survey, tapping into the nation's leading institutional investors, top strategists, and our own CNBC contributors. We asked them for their outlooks and strategies for the second quarter and beyond, and whether, this is a key question, whether the market has run too far too fast. You see the chart right here, 61% say we're in for a pullback, 39% say the market will keep moving higher. Joining me now with his take is Craig Johnson, Chief Market Technician at Piper Sandler. Craig, good morning. Good to see you.
Good morning, Frank. Thanks for having me back on.
All right. So we just saw what our Delivering Alpha survey said. What is your take? Where do you stand?
You know, Frank, I agree with that survey 100%. And I'll tell you that I think this is a market where we need to sort of cool our engines. This is a market that's had a 20%+ advance off of those October 23rd lows. And you start looking at a lot of the technical indicators. Number one, you're at the upper end of an 18-month price channel. Number two, you got 30-day overbought, oversold oscillators, overbought at this point in time. Number three, you've got a market that's trading 13% above a 40-week moving average. Number four, the breadth has not been fantastic for this market on the advance. And Frank, you were talking about some of those stocks earlier. So number five, that are not that are making new highs. What's not on that list is NVIDIA, SMCI, okay, and some of the more parabolic charts, Frank.
You know, we're going to talk about chips in a minute. You're actually adding some chip names to your technical opportunities portfolio. But by the way, Craig, I'm not totally surprised that you agree with the 61% that say we're going too hot or too far, too fast. You're keeping your S&P price target, which is interesting, at 50-50. Just for context, the median of the strategists that we track on CNBC Pro, they have a median price target of 51.25. So you're quite a bit lower than they are. At the same time, with that conservative target, you're still positive on equities, but you're reducing your exposure. Give me a lot of mixed messages. First, you gave me a list, Craig. Now you're also giving me some mixed messages. So you're positive on equities, but you're reducing exposure, and now you're 10% cash. Give me your thinking behind that.
So, Frank, sorry for the mixed messaging, but what we're trying to say to clients is, we like markets long term. Shorter term, we're due for a pullback, we're due for a correction. And we reduced our recommended equity exposure from 98% to 90%. And we also sold a bunch of parabolic looking charts, NVIDIA being one of them, VST and the utilities being another one. And then we added some names into the portfolio. You're right, we did add a couple chip names, such as Micron and TSM, Taiwan Semiconductor. But overall, Frank, we think that this is a market that's just, again, run too far too fast. It needs to cool its engines, and a good 5 to 10% correction toward the lower end of that trading range, I think, is the most likely scenario as we look forward to the next couple months.
So, Craig, again, you have a thesis of a pullback coming up, maybe 5 to 10%, as you just said, and also slowing momentum as we go into Q1. You're looking at technical indicators. At the same time, you're adding two chips. They're some of the hottest names in the market. I mean, Taiwan Semi and Micron both up more than 35% year to date. Also cyclical. So why add those if you feel like the momentum's slowing down?
Well, Frank, we still have technology, which is 25-26% of the entire market at this point in time. So if we're going to still have exposure to technology, we're just not going to be coming after these Mag 7 or Fantastic Four companies. We do find opportunities that are below the surface, and we find that Micron is at a point in time where we're breaking out the 24-year new highs. Like, I can't ignore a breakout like that, Frank, from a technical perspective. And Taiwan also looks constructive. It's just not nearly as extended as NVIDIA. I mean, we had a 16 bagger in NVIDIA. Okay. I think enough is enough.
Yeah, we're just looking at one of those charts right there. You don't have to be a technical analyst to see that breakout right there. Craig Johnson, sticking with your S&P price target of 50-50. Always great to see you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Frank.
All right, time now for a check on some of this morning's top corporate stories. Our Silvana Hanau is here with those. Silvana, good morning.
Hey, Frank, good morning to you. Well, Nelson Peltz apparently getting more support in his proxy fight with Disney. Bloomberg reporting proxy advisor Egan Jones says Disney shareholders should support Peltz nominees to the entertainment giant's board ahead of its annual meeting next week. The report says Egan Jones claims the move will force Disney to listen to new and different ideas. Last week, the largest proxy advisor, ISS, also backed Peltz. Meanwhile, shares of Merck are jumping ahead of the open after the FDA approved a drug designed to treat a progressive and life-threatening lung condition. The drug will be the first to target the root cause of the condition. Merck expects the treatment to be available in select specialty pharmacies in the U.S. by the end of next month. And shares of Robinhood also rising after it unveiled its first ever credit card. The retail trading firm is entering the competitive space with its Robinhood Gold Card, offering 3% cash back on all categories. The card will require a Robinhood Gold membership, which runs $5 per month or $50 annually, Frank.
All right, Silvana, thank you very much. We'll see you just a little bit later in the show. All right, we got a lot more to come here on Worldwide Exchange, including the WEX word of the day. But first, China's Xi Jinping sitting down with U.S. CEOs trying to lure business there. But can Beijing entice American companies as it continues to roll out protectionist policies? Plus, your morning's big money movers and game over for shares of GameStop as the retailer gets crushed ahead of the open. And then later, UPS shareholders asking, what can Brown do for me as the stock gets hit hard during its investor day? How CEO Carol Tomei says she plans to turn things around. We have a very busy hour still ahead when Worldwide Exchange returns.
What does it mean to be rich? Is it having more stories to share or time to give? Is it being able to keep your loved ones close or travel somewhere far away? At Edward Jones, we believe the key to being rich is knowing what counts. Your dedicated financial advisor will take a comprehensive approach to your financial strategy to help support what truly matters to you. EdwardJones.com/findyourrich. Edward Jones, member SIPC.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. FedEx Ground service is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
All right, welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. Time now for your big money movers, the stocks that are moving in the pre-market. We're starting off with Reddit, lower this morning after jumping another 9% yesterday. The stock closing at nearly double its original IPO pricing last Wednesday and roughly 39% above its debut price. Before the latest jump, New Street Research initiated coverage of the stock with a neutral rating and a $54 price target. You can see that's lower than the level that the stock's trading at right now. All right, shares of Adobe, they're moving higher this morning. The company announcing a new partnership with Microsoft at its summit aimed at bringing new generative AI capabilities to Microsoft 365. CEO Shantanu Narayen sitting down with our John Ford and touting the major benefits of the tech on CNBC yesterday.
AI is a massive tailwind in each one of those businesses, both with respect to attracting a whole new set of customers, as well as the ability to have additional value and therefore, you know, to be able to monetize that.
And shares of GameStop, they're plunging this morning. You can see down more than 15% after quarterly revenue fell due to rising competition from e-commerce firms and weak consumer spending. The company also says it's cutting an unspecified number of jobs to reduce cost. All right, turning now to China. That country's president meeting with a group of U.S. CEOs in Beijing earlier today, according to a state report, the sit-down coming as Xi and leaders look to shore up China's economy and boost foreign investments, which are hovering at multi-decade lows. But the effort coming after China said yesterday it filed a complaint to the World Trade Organization over U.S. electric vehicle subsidies, China calling them discriminatory and saying those subsidies distorted fair competition. For more, let's bring in Duarte McNeil on the CNBC Newsline. He's the managing director and senior policy analyst at Longview Global and, of course, a CNBC contributor. Duarte, always great to see you, or at least for this time, hear you. Good morning.
Good morning to you, Frank. How are you?
I just want to put a little context on that last nugget we had there. So for some context, the EU had actually launched an anti-subsidy investigation into Chinese EVs last year. The U.S. also issuing a warning to China about dumping last month. So that's kind of a back and forth issue. Needless to say, there's some persistent trade tensions globally between China and the West. Give me a sense. When we look at these meetings of U.S. business leaders and other foreign CEOs with President Xi and other Chinese leaders, you say there's diminishing returns. Why are there diminishing returns in these meetings?
Well, first of all, Frank, I do think it's important to note that talking and meeting is important. But the way that this used to work is foreign CEOs would show up. They would make pledges for further investment. They would praise the leadership. That would usually yield some sort of additional access to markets, additional deals. Those days are gone largely, Frank, because China doesn't need Western companies the way that they used to. There are many areas in which China is, quite frankly, looking to be more self-reliant. And so they have options. They have domestic options. And then the geopolitical environment is such, Frank, that I think Chinese companies, the Chinese government, Western governments and Western companies are still trying to figure out what the future is for business and economic engagement.
All right, so they're still trying to figure it out. So you say China doesn't necessarily need U.S. and other Western companies as they once did, but they still want them there. So why do they still want to have these meetings? Why still engage and try to attract foreign investment?
Yeah, I think it's important here to note, Frank, that there are some sectors that China really still needs Western businesses to engage. They need Western investment. But that's not all sectors, Frank. There are some sectors that China, as you well know, are leading the pack in, EV, climate tech. But where there is a need, the door is open. But the important thing to note here, Frank, is that this is more of a tactical shift than a long-term strategy adjustment by Xi. Xi still is looking to be as self-sufficient as possible in certain sectors and is still looking for Chinese companies to dominate at home and more frequently these days, Frank, abroad.
All right. So President Xi visited San Francisco last year, actually received, according to you, a standing ovation. You're hoping this time it's a bit of a different tone. You're actually hoping that U.S. CEOs press President Xi and other Chinese leaders. What do you want them to press the Chinese leaders about?
Yeah, look, I was not very happy with the way in which the San Francisco meeting for these CEOs went. If you're going to have these meetings, it's my view that they need to be more than just sort of speeches of policy platitude, as I say. We need policy specifics. What are the specific things that you're going to do to make sure that this market is not just open but welcoming over a sustained period of time for Western businesses? And so what I'm hoping that they will do is speak very clearly about some of their concerns about why they are leaving China or de-risking for China and what it would take for them to stay. What type of laws need to be clarified? What type of additional policy support? And I think, quite frankly, Frank, they can start by showing that they support their own private sector. I think that will help Western business feel a lot more comfortable about staying and increasing investments over the long term.
All right. A lot to unpack there. Again, navigating those U.S.-China tensions. Duarte McNeil, always great to see you. Thank you for your time and for your insight. All right, coming up here on Worldwide Exchange, shares of former President Trump's social media company, they are surging in their debut, while it's getting increasingly difficult for investors to ignore politics. We'll be right back on Worldwide Exchange with much more.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. Turning to the latest developments around the devastating bridge collapse in Baltimore. Officials now saying search and rescue efforts for six people who were working on the bridge at the time, they have now transitioned into a recovery effort. NBC's Alice Barr joins us now from Baltimore with the very latest. Alice, good morning.
Good morning, Frank. And there are so many questions about how this tragedy could have happened and what's ahead in order to rebuild the bridge and the lives forever altered.
In Baltimore this morning, a broken bridge uniting a community in grief as an urgent rescue mission for at least six missing people shifts to recovery.
We're going to do everything in our power to help these families find closure.
Our heart goes out to the families.
The missing part of a road repair crew filling potholes on the Francis Scott Key Bridge when a cargo ship as long as the Empire State Building started showing signs of distress. Flickering lights, dark smoke, and a mayday call as the ship's pilot warned he'd lost power and propulsion before slamming into a support column, sending the bridge tumbling into the Patapsco River.
The bridge is gone. Holy.
Two of the construction workers were quickly pulled to safety. And in the moments before impact, first responders acted quickly to stop traffic on the bridge. Video shows the last two cars crossing about 30 seconds before the bridge fell.
I need one of you guys on the south side, one of you guys on the north side, hold all traffic on the Key Bridge. There's a ship approaching that just lost their steering.
State, local, and federal agencies working together, with President Biden promising help to rebuild the bridge. The National Transportation Safety Board now interviewing witnesses, examining debris, data recorders, and past safety records.
The NTSB focuses on the facts. So we will figure that out and be able to provide that information in the coming days.
For now, the focus still on the human cost as families wait for answers from the dark water.
Officials believe it will take years to rebuild the Key Bridge, and that will massively shift how people get around this city. We should also note the very busy port of Baltimore is now completely locked down, and there is no timeline for when it will reopen. Frank?
All right. Alice Barr in Baltimore. Alice, thank you very much. So again, the first concern is human life, but the bridge's collapse is also impacting the global supply chain. General Motors and Ford say they will reroute affected shipments, though add the impact will be minimal. CSX and C.H. Robinson telling CNBC all international rail service to and from the Port of Baltimore has been paused, at least in the near term. The port is the busiest U.S. port for car shipments, handling about 850,000 vehicles last year. It's also the 11th largest port in the U.S. and the 9th biggest based on the value of cargo, with more than 52 million tons of foreign cargo worth over $80 billion. For more, let's bring in Judah Levine, head of research at Freightos, an online freight shipping marketplace and platform. Judah, good morning. It's great to have you here.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
So, again, number one concern is the loss of human life. Of course, our prayers and our thoughts for those families. But there is going to be an impact to the supply chain. So I want to get a sense from you in a broad sense. In the near term, how big of an impact is this to the East Coast supply chain? What's the near-term impact when we talk about rates?
Yeah, so as you said, there definitely will be an impact. We kind of have to split it into two categories. One is container traffic, right? Imports and exports of containerized goods. And the other, as you mentioned, is vehicle imports and exports. So if we start with containers, as you said, the Port of Baltimore is a large port, but it's not one of the largest. I think it's the fifth largest on the East Coast alone. They handle something like a million containers in 20 unit equivalents a year. If we talk about kind of total U.S. imports last year, they were at about 22 million, so that's a little bit less than 5%. So kind of on an immediate impact, there'll be an impact on, exporters who are dependent or normally rely on the Port of Baltimore. They're going to have to move those either weight or move those goods by truck or rail to other export ports. So there'll definitely be kind of that local impact. And for imports as well, importers who rely on Baltimore are going to have to adjust and see diversions to other ports. But those are, much larger ports likely have that capacity to absorb those.
So it sounds like near-term disruptions, rates might spike a bit, but then things will normalize because there are other larger points, including the Port of New York, New Jersey, the Port of Norfolk, there's other neighboring ports. It's short-term an inconvenience that might lead to a quick spike. I want to point out something that you just mentioned. It's not a big container port, but it is a big, and if you watch our coverage, it's a big roll-on, roll-off port. That means there's a lot of things, machinery, cars that come out of there. Busiest port for auto shipments, as we said, $23 billion in autos and light trucks. We had the Mercedes-Benz US CEO on our air yesterday saying it's going to take a while to really figure out the real impact. But we do know there's going to be an impact. Alice mentioned it's going to take years to rebuild the bridge. Is this going to impact the supply of autos or the supply here in the U.S. or the supply of export of autos to other places and parts and things like that?
Right. So as you said, it is the largest roll-on, roll-off port in North America. Something like 70% of those vehicles handled are imports. So I would say if we can compare it to container traffic, the likelihood is a bigger impact in terms of auto imports than in terms of consumer goods. But likewise, as you said, as we heard from kind of leadership in the auto industry, they're also looking for alternatives. There are alternative ports that handle large volumes of autos, but because of the size of Baltimore, it may have a larger impact and take more time to kind of even out.
I want to ask you one last question. We're talking a lot about containers and exports and imports coming off ships, but does this automatically increase the rates of trucking? And again, trucking is how 70% of things get around the U.S. because a lot of these things will have to be trucked to different places. Should we look for a near-term spike specifically in trucking as well?
Yeah, I would think so. Probably in trucking and rail as well, but we'll have a short-term impact in terms of an increase in demand and therefore an increase of rates. And trucking is quite regional. So, it will take some time and we'll see some impact on higher costs until alternatives are found and this kind of stabilizes.
All right. A lot to watch here. Judah Levine from Freightos. Great to see you. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Turn our attention to another big money mover. We're talking UPS. Shares They're rebounding this morning after posting their worst day yesterday since earnings back in January, the move following its investor day, where it laid out its 2026 financial targets and vision for the future of global logistics. For fiscal year 2026, revenues forecast to be between $108 and $114 billion. Just to put that in perspective, for this year, revenue outlook is between $92 billion and $94.5 billion. The stock opening fractionally higher yesterday before falling when UPS pointed to excess capacity in the parcel market of 12 million packages per day. Analysts I spoke with say that number, it raised some questions about the company's plans to grow volumes and margins in its 1+2 plan. On CNBC yesterday, CEO Carol Tomei laying out the current demand environment and efforts to bring customers back after losing business during the contract negotiations with the Teamsters.
I'm happy to report that we have brought 60% of that volume that diverted back into our network. And it's not just about winning back, it's also about winning new. We do believe that volume will be down in the first half of this year, but we expect it to return to growth in the back half of the year.
Analysts I spoke with added that the targets and the overall plan, they called it just a bit aspirational, and the outlook seemed to depend on a Goldilocks scenario, not only for UPS, but also for the U.S. economy. B of A analyst Ken Hexter out with a note that captures a lot of that skepticism, saying in part, the 2026 EPS estimate is 20% higher than their numbers. He also notes that UPS missed the targets they laid out at their last investor day. Again, shows UPS rebounding a bit in the pre-market after having their worst day since earnings back in January. All right, coming up here on Worldwide Exchange, Adam Neumann's bid to get WeWork back under his control, not looking so easy. The apparent uphill battle he's facing in that bid, and we'll be back after this break. Welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. I'm Frank Holland. Let's get you ready for the trading day ahead. We pick up the half an hour with a check of U.S. stock futures. Take a look. Futures in the green across the board. Looks like the Dow would open up almost 150 points higher. As you see right here, the S&P and the NASDAQ both firmly in positive territory. We also want to look at the Dow gainers this morning. We're talking some names you know, of course, Dow blue chip stocks here. Merck right at the top of the list, up over 4.5%. Followed at a distant second by Nike, up just over 0.5%. Goldman Sachs, just under 0.5%. We also want to get a check on oil this morning. WTI and Brent, they're coming off their fourth negative session in the last five. Take a look. The oil market continues to be under pressure, though off of its lows of earlier today. You see WTI trading just below 81 bucks a barrel, down just about 1%. Brent crude trading at basically 85.40 a barrel, also down just about 1%. We also want to talk another commodity, cocoa. Prices hitting a record yesterday, breaking above 10,000 for the very first time. You see the big upside move when it comes to this commodity that so many of us love. You see it's trading pretty much right now at 96.22 when it comes to the May futures right now. Over the last year, supply constraints have really fueled that price climb. Again, right now you can see it's unchanged, but moving higher over the last year or so, trading at an all-time high yesterday. Okay, that is your morning setup. Right now, we're watching shares of former President Trump's social media company jumping more than 50% in its early trading debut yesterday. By mid-afternoon, Trump Media and Technology Group had a market valuation of at least $8.4 billion on an undiluted share basis. While Trump, he won't be able to cash out immediately, it does provide a financial bump as he continues his presidential campaign and he faces mounting legal bills. The debut of Trump Media drives home a point raised in a recent piece by The Economist titled How to Trade an Election, pointing out it's becoming increasingly difficult for investors to avoid politics. For much more on this, let's bring in Jarrett Seaberg, Managing Director of the Washington Research Group at TD Cowen. Jarrett, good morning. Great to have you on the show.
Good morning. Happy to be here.
All right, let's talk broadly. Let's start off broadly. When it comes to politics, does that impact investors and their sentiment and their decision-making more, or does it impact companies more?
Oh, I'm not sure we can go either or on that. Maybe we have to say both, right? I mean, certainly when you think about institutional investors as well as retail investors, they can't help but be influenced by what they hear over your airwaves, what they read in the newspaper. You know, we hear grandiose plans about what various candidates plan to do, and that has to influence their thinking. From a corporate side, you know, they have to make long-term investment decisions. And as they look out at the political environment, you know, they have to make a calculation. Who do they think is going to win and what is that going to mean for taxes, for regulations, and for their futures.
All right, so certainly a lot to consider there. You gave us a list of the most politically sensitive sectors. One of them's healthcare. So obviously there's some issues politically from the Biden administration where they're trying to regulate drug prices. There's also financials. There's energy. So when we're looking ahead to the November election, how do you think investors are viewing these especially politically sensitive sectors?
Sure. So with my colleagues at the Washington Research Group at TD Cowen, we put out a note previewing all the companies and issues that we expect to really be impacted by the election. And you certainly named the top three on our list. You know, I think that as you think about healthcare in particular, you know, my colleagues do a lot of work in that space. And it's really drug approvals and Medicare where there's a lot of interest. You know, in general, the Democrats, as you suggested, are much more open to negotiating drug prices. And I do think that, you know, is one of the more concrete things that you can look at in this upcoming election, particularly in the healthcare space, where there really could be a difference between the candidates.
I want to hit on one of those other sectors, energy. And you and I, we had a chance to chat yesterday. You hit on a really interesting point. So generally, the thinking is that Republican candidates might be more pro-energy and fossil fuels and things like that. But during the Biden administration, we've seen record oil production. In fact, the forecast for next year is record oil production of 13.65 million barrels per day. Again, a record high. We pull back a bit this year from another record in 2023. So give me a sense. How does that intuition, how does that really play out when it comes to investing? Can we just... It's a bit counterintuitive to think that the Biden administration would be, you know, the time when we see the biggest oil production.
Right. Shh, come on. We're not supposed to tell anyone. That's like the big Democratic secret here. You know, this administration, you know, we think about Trump and we say, you know, pump, baby, pump. But really, it's this administration that's been pumping out oil. You know, they don't like to take credit for it. You know, it doesn't necessarily go well with their kind of green energy push that you saw in the Inflation Reduction Act. But, you know, Biden administration has definitely created a favorable environment to pull more oil out of the ground. I do think, you know, when we look at this space broadly, that Republicans, particularly President Trump, would be more in favor of fracking and some other policies that Democrats are a little less willing to embrace. So there's probably a slight edge for Republicans on this issue, but it's definitely not as negative with a Democratic president as I think the conventional wisdom would hold.
Yeah, it sounds like you're saying investors need to look past the headlines and look at what's really going on when it comes to all these issues. Jared Seaborg,
100%.
I think we're going to have to talk to you quite a few more times before November. Looking forward to that. Thank you very much. Great to see you.
Pleasure.
All right, time now for a check on more of this morning's top corporate stories. Silvana Hanau is back with those. Silvana.
Hey, Frank, good morning to you. Well, more pressure potentially coming down on TikTok. The FTC is reportedly investigating the social media platform over faulty privacy and data security practices. The commission is looking into whether TikTok and parent company ByteDance deceived users by denying that individuals in China had access to their data and violating a children's privacy law. A lawsuit or settlement could come in the coming weeks. Meanwhile, the Financial Times says J.P. Morgan CEO Jamie Dimon had a one-on-one lunch at the White House last week with Vice President Kamala Harris. Now, this comes as tensions between the Biden administration and U.S. businesses continue to rise as executives flag concerns over taxes, trade, and regulation. And Adam Neumann facing an uphill battle in his bid to buy back WeWork. The founder and former CEO who was ousted from the company 5 years ago is offering to buy WeWork out of bankruptcy for more than $500 million. But sources say he may not have the financing needed for a deal. WeWork previously said it receives interest from third parties on a regular basis and is working in the best interest of the company, Frank.
All right, Silvana, thank you very much. All right, coming up, Apple looking to pull a U-turn on its very rough start of the year. Take a look at that chart. Shares down more than 11% year to date. The key event that could determine the stock's next steps. We are back in just a moment. Welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. Time now for your morning call sheet. We start with Evercore initiating coverage of Western Digital, giving it an outperform rating and an $80 price target. Evercore saying the company is uniquely positioned to outperform, given a number of tailwinds that could drive sizable upside to estimates. Citi cutting its price target on Tesla to $196 per share. Citi saying it's lowering estimates around the EV maker to reflect recent data points ahead of Tesla's Q1 delivery release. And KBW downgrading its rating on Wells Fargo to market perform, saying while it's enthusiastic about the stock, it believes shares are set for a consolidation phase. All right, turning now to Apple, setting a date for its annual developers conference set to kick off on June 10th. Expectations are the tech giant could reveal its long-awaited artificial intelligence strategy. That could provide some support for Apple stock, which has had a very rough start to 2024. You see here, down more than 11% so far year to date. Our Steve Kovac joins us now with Apple's rough start to the year. Steve, good morning.
Hey, Frank. Yeah, so Apple started 2024 on top. We had the launch of the Vision Pro, returning to earnings growth for the first time in a year, and, well, the largest market cap in the world. But a slew of headwinds, many of them from governments around the world, have humbled Apple this year, sending shares down about 11% year to date. And all this is happening while its big tech peers continue to climb on hopes of AI. Let's run down what Apple's experienced so far this year. First, we had the China business may not be improving as hoped. iPhone sales fell 24% in the first 6 weeks of 2024 from the same period a year ago. That's according to a recent report from Counterpoint Research. And then the EU started enforcing its tough new tech law. That's the Digital Markets Act. The EU said Monday it's investigating Apple for violations of that law, which could come with steep fines. And then we had Apple canceling its next big thing, that self-driving car project Titan. And last week, of course, the DOJ unleashed its wide-ranging antitrust lawsuit. So what can change things or turn it around? Well, mark down in your calendar June 10th. That's when Apple said yesterday it's going to hold WWDC, its annual developers conference, and we're likely to hear the AI plans for Apple there. And if you don't believe me, take a look at this X post from Greg Joswiak. He's Apple's marketing boss, teasing a, quote, absolutely incredible WWDC with the A and I capitalized. You can do solve that puzzle there yourself. But look, Apple's put enormous pressure on itself too, as Tim Cook has put it, break new ground in artificial intelligence. Apple doesn't have a clear AI narrative yet and instead has been pointing to past products and features and recasting them as AI instead. Now, after all that in WWDC over the summer, in September, Apple is expected to release new iPhones, of course, and those will need to come with some exclusive AI features, kind of like we've seen in Samsung phones, to convince folks to buy and upgrade, Frank.
Steve, man, you're digging deep in those tweets, yeah. Looking at the capital A and the I. I like that. But on a serious note, some of the pressure on Apple this year, again, shares down more than 11% year to date, has been because of regulation, specifically from the DOJ. What's next when it comes to that?
Yeah, and last week when that report or that suit was filed, we saw shares fall 4%. What's next? So Apple has to respond. In fact, I talked to some folks at Apple yesterday, and one of their key arguments is going to be, as they respond to the DOJ, is this idea about market share. So the DOJ is claiming Apple has a monopoly here in the United States, but Apple really only has about 50% market share. Compare that to the Microsoft case a couple decades ago, where Microsoft's computing Windows had about 95% market share. So expect Apple to start arguing in a more formal way in the court about it's not really a monopoly as the DOJ alleges, Frank.
All right, our Steve Kovac live at the NASDAQ. Steve, great to see you. Thank you very much. All right, time now for your global briefing. We start with Chinese President Xi Jinping reportedly meeting with U.S. executives and academics in Beijing today. Among those present were Chubb CEO Evan Greenberg, as well as the presidents of the National Committee on U.S.-China Relations and the U.S.-China Business Council. In Japan, the yen falling to a 34-year low against the dollar. That's in response to the Bank of Japan, Ministry of Finance and Financial Services Agency currently holding a special meeting on the currency. And shares of BYD, they're falling in the stock's worst sell-off in 7 months. The EV maker posting an 18% increase in the fourth quarter profit, the slowest since the first quarter of 2022. Other Chinese EVs moving lower in tandem. You see right now NIO down nearly 6%, XPeng down more than 6%. All right, coming up, the one word that every investor needs to know about the trading day ahead. Plus, our next guest has some stunning market stats that show how strong this rally has really been, including something stocks have not done in the last 50 years. And we're going to tell you what she's telling her clients right now. And as CNBC celebrates Women's Heritage Month,
As we head to break, here is our Julia Boorstin with a look at the impact of women-owned businesses.
Women own more than 14 million, or 39% of all businesses in the U.S. That's an increase of nearly 14% in the last 4 years, growing at a faster rate than male-owned businesses. Female business owners employed more than 12 million people and generated nearly $3 trillion in revenue last year. For Women's History Month, I'm Julia Boorstin.
All right, welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. Time now for your WEX wrap-up. We start with proxy advisor Egan Jones reportedly backing Nelson Peltz in his fight against Disney, saying Peltz's nominees to the board will force the company to, quote, listen to new and different ideas. This comes just 1 week ahead of Disney's annual shareholder meeting. Robinhood getting in on the credit card business as it looks to grow within the personal finance market and boost subscriptions to its premium tier. The credit card will be available exclusively to Gold customers and comes 2 years after the launch of its debit card. CEO Vlad Tenev will have much more on this coming up on Squawk Box at 7:30 a.m. Eastern. Shares of Merck, they're taking off after the FDA approved one of its drugs designed to treat a rare and life-threatening lung condition. We're also watching shares of GameStop. They're plunging after the company reported a decline in revenue due to rising competition from e-commerce firms. It's also cutting an unspecified number of jobs to reduce cost. Turning our attention back to the markets as enthusiasm around stocks shows signs of waning, at least as of late. But right now, looking at the futures market, see futures are higher. Looks like the Dow would open up about 170 points higher, hitting its highs of this morning. Joining me now is Lizzie Evans, managing partner at Evans May Wealth, a firm with $1.2 billion in assets under management. Lizzie, good morning. It's good to see you.
Good morning, Frank.
All right, so a lot of debate on the network about the momentum in the market. Is it slowing down? Is it just a pause? Whether or not you're coming to us with this, like a bit of a history lesson. We've seen a trend in the markets we haven't seen since the Nixon administration. Why is that important to you?
Well, Frank, we've had 100 consecutive trading days without a 2% correction. And as you mentioned, if you look at the last 18 trading weeks, 16 out of those 18 trading weeks have posted positive weekly gains on the S&P. We've not seen that since 1971, so more than 50 years. And going back 70 years, only 5 times. All of that to say, we're due for a little bit of a market pullback here.
All right, so you think we're in due for a market pullback. I want to get a sense of how you see today shaping up with futures higher. What's your WEX word of the day?
My WEX word of the day is time out. So, Frank, I'm born and raised in Indiana, went to Indiana University, so I am a Hoosier at heart. And us Hoosiers love basketball, especially in March. And this market reminds me so much of a high-octane March Madness basketball game with a lot of offense. So every good coach knows that from time to time, you need to take a time out and reassess strategy, make some adjustments. And that is exactly the conversation we're having with clients today.
Yeah. According to your famous coach, Bobby Knight, sometimes you got to throw a chair, too. Also, I want to get the latest get your take on the latest Levering Alpha investor survey, looking at which sectors were outperformed this year. So 61 of respondents, they say tech, 57% say financials. In third place, 39% say industrials or energy. You can see the rest here on the screen. What's your take? What sector do you see?
I think mega cap tech will continue to deliver. Two stock ideas that we like DR Horton. If you look at the supply demand imbalance with home builders, that should be a tailwind for the next 4 to 5 years. Plus, as we see interest rates come down, that should be a boost to new home sales. So DR Horton is well positioned within its geographical footprint, strong balance sheet, great free cash flow, and also CrowdStrike.
Yeah, I want to talk to you about CrowdStrike for a minute. CrowdStrike shares are just about up 1%, lagging the triple Qs and the rest of tech since Palo Alto Networks announced that they were platforming their business, which kind of shook up the industry. So I want to get a sense from you, long term, do you see CrowdStrike being impacted by that near term revenue shift, or do you think it's able to work through that?
I think it's able to work through that. CrowdStrike is up, it's tripled in the last 15 months. But as you mentioned, platform consolidation, that is the new buzzword within cybersecurity. Right. And within cybersecurity, the cybersecurity vendors are in a race to gain market share as customers look to really consolidate their cybersecurity spending.
Lizzie Evans, always great to see you. Your picks, DR Horton and CrowdStrike, again, thank you very much.
Quick look at futures before we let everybody go right now. As we mentioned, looks like the Dow was hitting its highs of the morning just a short time ago, looking like it would open up about 170 points higher. The S&P and the NASDAQ both firmly in the green. That does it for us. You've been listening to CNBC's Worldwide Exchange. You can always catch us live weekdays at 5 a.m. Eastern.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. FedEx Ground service is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.